Good afternoon, Wahoos and ACC fans. This is Frank Maloney with my trusty co-host, Jim Hobgood. We're glad to be here on Labor Day. Wahoo fans are clearly basking in the glow of a crucial 19-16 win over favored BYU. Why crucial, Hobbo?
No, it was first game. Every win's big, and I think, you know, we're trying to count to six or seven. We'd like to have more than that, but we'd at least like to count to six or seven, so getting that first one really helps, particularly where it falls on the schedule.
Absolutely. Tonight we will review UVA's home win and then the importance of playing even better next Saturday. UVA hosts the number three in the nation, Oregon Ducks, at Scott Stadium at 3:30 p.m. So hopefully we'll have a little less rain and a little less lightning and a little less confusion getting our fans, 53,000 fans, shuttled out of the Scott Stadium, which was so bizarre to watch with clear skies at that time. But anyhow, most of the fans came back. I would say 30 to 35,000 came back into the stadium. And like Mike London said, hooray for them, because I think that made a big difference in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and I, you know, Chris Sill, who is sitting to my left here, he mentioned before we went on air, kudos to the fans, because not only did they sit through a two-hour rain delay, they sat or stood wherever they were. But then in the third quarter, I mean, it just was coming down to heavy, steady rain.
The heavens opened up.
And most of the fans left the stands again to go back undercover, and once more they came back. So what proved to be, what, a five-and-a-half-hour football game? It was a long game. Anyway, we're glad you've joined us tonight. We really do have a great Labor Day show for you. We have former UVA star quarterback Aaron Brooks. He'll be joining us in a few minutes, and then in the second half hour, another UVA football player who did exceedingly well while at Virginia, John Copper. And then our friend Dr. Gordy Rawls from Ortho Virginia will be joining us late in the program to give us the update on the injury report and so forth.
And we've also got the Sabre.com's recruiting expert, Chris Horn.
Oh, jam-packed show.
Yes,
jam-packed.
So stay tuned. This is going to be a lot of fun tonight. Next week's guests are former UVA star wide receiver and defensive back Ahmad Hawkins, most well known for the great catch and run and touchdown that he scored in Blacksburg, thanks to a brilliant throw by Aaron Brooks. Maybe one of the most amazing passes and catches and runs and touchdowns. And I'll never forget Ahmad kneeling down in the end zone and looking up at the heavens with his arms open wide, and then just almost pandemonium on the Virginia sideline. We're also working on Billy McMullen. Quite possibly the former UVA and NFL star will join us next week. If not next week, certainly the week thereafter. And definitely next week we have Dr. Thorpe Davis, one of the fine specialists, a surgeon at Ortho Virginia. That'll all be next week at 6 p.m. Monday night. There are several ways to follow our show, Chris.
All right, y'all. Who's talking? It's streaming live on sportsradio910.com and thesaber.com. So if you want to call in the old-fashioned way and give Jim or Frank some questions or maybe some advice, the number is 345-0910.
Or some money. Money would be fine, too.
Money, too. Right.
We'll take money.
Yeah.
Checks. Checks are okay.
Still a sponsor spot available if you want to jump in.
But anyway, all shows are archived on thesaber.com, and we've also got a Facebook page, so go ahead and search Who's Talking, become a fan, and we'll go from there.
Oh, another thing, you can go and download the iHeartRadio app for free and listen on your smartphone anywhere.
So anywhere in the world.
Anywhere, just about. And we've had some of our most loyal listeners who've done it in a number of towns outside of Virginia, and they've talked about how clear it is, which I think is remarkable. But anyhow.
Well, I think we ought to give Frank Maloney a game ball. You know, I decided that over the weekend. I sat next to him during the entire 5.5 hour marathon. He took about 55 pages of notes during the game, scribbling down this and everything else. Anytime something went well, he was punching me in the shoulder, doing this, see there, you know, and all this other stuff. So I've decided that Frank works every bit as hard as the coaches or players during the course of a football game. But no. It's a big win. Now, see, you're not going to like this. I think the rain helped the Hoos.
Well, I don't disagree with all the field.
Because there were three critical plays, the blocked punt where the guy fumbled the snap.
Yes.
And then the quarterback fumbled the ball that led to what could have been a touchdown, but it was a safety.
Yep.
And then, of course, on the key interception, the receiver had it in his hands and it just slipped right through.
You know, no doubt the weather impacted some of those big plays there. However, it also impacted Virginia. And Virginia had a very hard time grabbing hold of all those misdirection.
It was wet on both sides of the field? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, misdirection plays. Virginia had a hard time grabbing and tackling some of those guys because they were coming at all those crazy angles. And, you know, let's face it, the wide receivers for Brigham Young did not help their quarterback. They dropped some big balls. And, you know, at times he looked like the only one that really knew what he was doing. With the exception of a couple of bad bobbles. He had some very unfortunate bobbles.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. I think Virginia's only sustained drive of the day was that drive late in the second quarter where they got to field goal, right? Because the two touchdowns
They barely drove across midfield at that.
The two touchdowns were both like 15-yard drives.
Yeah, they were a result of
The punt block and the interception.
Correct. And it's interesting. One of the things that did not happen for Virginia last year was either causing turnovers or either capitalizing on the turnovers they did get. And you could see what a huge difference it had because even though Brigham Young ran 93 plays, which seems almost impossible, right? You know, Virginia still was in control that game, was winning the line of scrimmage for much of the game, but it all came down to those big turnovers. The block kick where Virginia took the penalty and forced Brigham Young to punt again, and the punter, the perfect snap, hit him right in the chest. Bad place. You know, you got to get your hands up, buddy. And Anthony Harris swooped in and made a brilliant block. The safety was really the quarterback fumbled the ball out of his own hands, and the ball, you know, sort of rolled down the goal line. And
But again, it's probably wet football contributes to these things.
But he had the ball in his hands before he just came loose. He got too excited and lost the ball. And then, you know, how Virginia had three defensive players around the ball. Daquan Romero was one of them. I can't remember the other two. Maybe David Dean, who had a great game in spite of a sprained knee. He came back on the field. And there was a third player. And somehow they didn't get a touchdown there. And that was very frustrating. I thought that was going to come back to haunt Virginia. In a big way, hats off to Coach London, who lost his voice. Got to give John Tenuta a lot of credit because I think he was able to put the defense in position to put pressure on the other team.
I thought the defense played well. I mean, it's game one, and it's hard to know for sure. I guess we'll find out a lot more about how good the defense is this week.
I have a funny feeling we're going to see some zone defense in the secondary on some plays to try to throw off the Ducks because I tell you what, you do not want an imbalanced field against those people. If they get you running the wrong way and they do a pitch toss or a quick pass to the other direction, you're dead. I mean, they're that fast. But, you know, it's interesting. I mean, they only have 15 of their starters back, and they've got a new head coach. I think the dangerous thing about Oregon is Marcus Mariota. He's only a sophomore, but he flashed all kinds of talent last year, and he can run and throw and very clever ball handler. So, you know,
well, it's a challenge and an opportunity, and hopefully the weather will be just a little bit better, and we'll have a full house on Saturday at 3:30.
No doubt. All right, you know, and I think right now we're going to get ready to go to break. We have Aaron Brooks coming up on the other side. Aaron has been a guest on Who's Talking on several occasions, and he most famously last year mentioned that he had made the comment to Virginia fans that maybe David Watford deserved a look. Well, David's now 1-0, and we'll see what happens this weekend, but it's almost like he didn't quite predict it, but he did certainly urge Virginia's staff that maybe they should look at David Watford a little bit better, and clearly David can run. He's got to work on staying in the pocket, not getting the happy feet, and he's got to find receivers down the field. I think Virginia has got to get the ball up the field.
Well, it was his game one. He's got a lot of games to go. At any rate, we're going to go to break right now. As Frank said, we'll have Aaron Brooks when we return. Stay tuned. Who's Talking is on the air. All right, welcome back to Who's Talking. Hobbo and Frank, Chris Sill also in the house. We'll be joined by former Virginia quarterback Aaron Brooks here momentarily. And Frank, before we get him on the line, is going to give you a brief introduction of the quarterback.
Aaron Brooks, outstanding quarterback, rifle arm, pretty fast. Clearly remember him making a spin move at midfield up at College Park one time and running it in from about 50 yards out. Still one of the slickest moves I've seen by any quarterback. I guess Aaron is possibly best known for beating Virginia Tech back-to-back. Did it at home 34-20 on the 29th of November back in 97, and then on November 28th at Virginia Tech when Tech was number 20 in the country. Huge comeback win, 36-32. I think Thomas Jones had a little hand in that turnaround, as well as Ahmad Hawkins, who has been a terrific guest for us really every year we've been on the show. And Aaron, it's good to have you back. We clearly remember last year when you said David Watford deserved a look. And so how do you feel now after the first game?
I'm relieved. I'm relieved. And this is why, for everybody to understand why. We really could have avoided the entire situation last year of the quarterback controversy. If we would have redshirted, and this is just me talking, we would have redshirted Watford his freshman year.
Yes.
Instead of wasting his redshirt, we could have actually just redshirted him, and he could have been competing with Rocco for the starting job last year.
Correct.
And so we wasted an opportunity to last year. I mean, we just wasted a season last year for the simple fact that we went and got Sims. Sims didn't work out as well, and now the kid is out of school, so he's ineligible. So not only did that didn't work out, those two kids had a wonderful opportunity to graduate from the University of Virginia, and that was really sad to see at the end of the day that it didn't work out for either quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm proud that the right guy is at the position right now, and we see how well he had played last this past Saturday. But you know, he's still young and he got a lot of work to do ahead of him.
A lot of catching up to do, right?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
All right, he was 18 of 32 with one touchdown and one interception. I thought the touchdown was extraordinary. Have watched it on replay today three times, and it was very obvious to me that was definitely threading the needle if there ever was one down the right sideline on a wet field in the corner of the end zone, and how Darius Jennings got his big toe down running that fast. Anyway, it was pretty exciting to see number 5 hit number 6 in the end zone, and really maybe the play that gets him going, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I just think he's a, you know, I'm a big fan of David. I had an opportunity to work with him. Of course, I'm going to be biased in some ways with this guy. But when you look at David, David has all the intangibles of a pro quarterback. He's tall, he's smart, got a quick release, he throws a great ball, he makes sound decisions, and he's athletic as well. I mean, now it seems like the quarterback nowadays become a little more athletic, but at the same time, David can sit in the pocket and throw the ball from the pocket as well, and so there's a lot of upside to him, and I think with the right preparation and training that the staff they brought in this year, it can happen for him. But in the meantime, you know, he got to prove himself the next 2 to 3 years. So I'm excited about the Hoos finally. Finally,
you know what's interesting is, I thought Virginia did an excellent job most of the game of protecting him. I thought that at times they could do a little bit better job with the run blocking, because Parks, I felt like he had to make a lot of moves to get any yards, and he had to carry somebody on his back. But, you know, he broke through and had a nice run down there following the Harris interception lateral to Coley. You know, the very next play, they handed it to him, and, you know, Parks said in the locker room that he knew the backside of the play would open up sooner or later. And when I watched the replay, he had already made up his mind he was going to cut back out. And he ran over two guys. I think those guys are still down on the turf at Scott Stadium. But let's talk about what does David Watford have to do this week to get ready for trying to keep pace with a high-scoring team like Oregon. And do you ever remember a game like this, Aaron Brooks?
We play Auburn. They were very prolific in terms of their total team effort, and they had a lot of guys who went to the pros that year. What Davey has to do is really what the whole team has to do. They got to play lights out football. They got to play their best football. Everybody on that entire on UVA sideline have to play their best football in order for us to have a chance. They're number three football team in the country. They're quick. They're fast. They're athletic. They have known to play. They've played a lot of tough, ranked teams in the country. And, we just haven't really played well against a lot of ranked teams. And so we will have to really play our best football. The ownership falls on the whole team, but David definitely has to do his part. He will really have to, take care of the ball, make precise throws. They got to catch the ball. We had a couple of drops last week. Mm-hmm. The run game has to be sound. Defense got to play lights out. Special teams got to be on point. And so, we just got to know that, it's possible, but it's not impossible. And so it just, it'll be a good test to see where we are against ranked teams, being that this team is still, I believe, that it's still young.
Well, clearly a young team. It seems to me, watching the replay of the Virginia Brigham Young game, that, maybe the new offensive coordinator, Steve Fairchild, maybe he was holding a lot of plays back, because rarely did they put David on a rollout or any bootleg of any type, almost like they're saving some plays so that they have something to show Oregon that they haven't seen on film, right?
Well, I don't think, one thing you got to remember is a lot of times I don't think coordinators want to save plays. I don't think that's in the best interest. They call the best plays that's going to get them positive yardage or a touchdown. And so with him being on a boost, not necessarily typical of David's game. As mm-hmm. I mentioned before, David can step back in that pocket and throw the ball, whether it's a shotgun or under the center. He can step, he can drop back and throw it with some of the best quarterbacks in the nation. That's how I truly feel how good David is. And so he don't necessarily have to be rolled out. Now, when we see Saturday a lot of pressure and guys getting in and getting after him, I think that may be a situation where they would need to do a lot more of that. But we got to roll with what's working. If the running game is working, if the short pass game working, whatever is working, I think we need to continue to do that, because we have to find an identity.
Yes.
Who we are as a football team. Are you going to be a down here running game team type of team with the ability to throw the ball deep, or are you just going to be a pocket team or rollout team? And so we have to create something that gets some continuity going for other teams within our conference later on in the year.
Yeah, this is Hobble, by the way, visiting with Aaron Brooks, and you mentioned throw the ball deep. That's one thing they didn't do a whole lot of Saturday. Was that, do you think that's part of the game plan, or maybe the offensive line wasn't giving the quarterback enough time to do that?
That's more so the weather. It was really wet. So, you don't want to put the ball in the air too long, and, in case the ball might slip and it comes out pretty awkward. And maybe the opportunity probably didn't present itself. And so there were some situations there that may have prevented that.
Speaking of that, were you surprised late in the game when BYU did make the attempted pass on that third down situation given the weather?
I was surprised completely with that, but I was also surprised with the tempo BYU was using in the fourth quarter when they had control. They had us. They was up, and they were still almost. They was running the no huddle offense. I understand that's their offense, but I thought they should have slowed the ball down and try to milk that clock and try not to do too much too fast. And you see what happened at the end. It cost them.
You know, that type of high tempo offense is probably very hard to turn it on and off. And clearly,
the conditions were very sloppy, and that was ideal for them not to do it. but they did it anyway.
They certainly did. And, you know, we have got a minute before we go to break. Aaron, any final thoughts heading into this game, and what might Wahoo fans expect of the Cavaliers going into this game?
Well, I think more importantly, I think obviously we want to win. But I think we're really looking at it from a realistic point of view that this is a very good test for us. You know, I think we all, it's fair to say that we really haven't done it too well over the years, and we can't really say that this is a game we know we're going to win. I think we can all agree on that we have to go out there and feel that as if though we are going to win and that we got to play our best football to win. And so that's the way I see it, and that's the conversation I've been having around town about this game because a lot of people are like, ooh and ah about Oregon coming to town.
Well, it's certainly a big game. I understand there's only about 500 tickets left, so they've done a good job of finding an opponent that people wanted to see. And let's hope Virginia can play their best game and give them a real fight. And, Aaron, we'd like to have you come back in a couple weeks and do another assessment and see how David Watford's been doing so far.
Yeah, I'd be excited to, you know, talk about it and have your listeners chime in on what we talked about today and the thoughts about how David is progressing as a quarterback. I'm excited for him. I hope he continues to do well, and more importantly, as a team, I hope we can get back on somewhat of a national stage in the top 25 and finally someday beat Tech, hopefully
yeah.
this year.
Well, I think we're all looking forward to that, and as well as being in the top 25 team. Aaron, we thank you.
Oh, what's that? Hey, man, I've been out of school about 16 years. We can beat Tech probably one time, and that was in Charlottesville. So we haven't beat Tech in about 16 years.
Yeah, it's been a one-sided rivalry for the last 10 to 15 years, no question about it. But at any rate, Aaron, again, thanks for taking a couple of minutes to join us. And as Frank said, we'll look forward to having you back.
No problem. Take care, guys.
Thank you.
All right, you're listening to Who's Talking. We're going to the bottom of the hour break. When we return, former linebacker John Copper will join us to talk defense. Stay tuned.
All right, we're back. This is Frank Maloney with Jim Hobgood and Chris Sill. And we have none other than former UVA linebacker extraordinaire, John Copper. And John has been a terrific guest for us in the last few seasons and really stays on top of the Wahoos. John, new linebackers this year, Leroy Reynolds and Steve Greer graduated along with their epic tackle totals. And now we've got some new guys. We got Romero, Coley, and Brim. So how'd they do?
Yeah, I thought overall the linebackers played solid. I thought just the defensive effort entirely was good, and you obviously can't have a strong defensive effort unless the linebackers are right in the thick of it. And I thought they did a good solid day one for those guys.
And it's interesting, you know, John Tenuta, former UVA defensive back, returned to his alma mater this year, and he's well known for his yelling. He scares literally the out of people. And you can hear him all over Charlottesville when he's trying to coach up his defensive players. But I saw Coley make a couple of nice tackles where he literally textbook picked the man right up and put him on his back. I thought Romero came very close to recovering that fumbled ball by their quarterback in the end zone. That was Taysom Hill rolled out to his left down near the goal line, and the ball just came out of his hands. And Romero, I saw him after the play. He was hitting himself in the helmet. He knew he had a touchdown in his hands. Brim had some plays late in the game, but I don't remember too much of his number being called overall. But, don't you think for their first game together, they did reasonably well?
Oh, absolutely. First outing, definitely. I mean, I remember, we kind of went in transition my sophomore year, and it was kind of a similar thing with all of us coming out and playing together. And I thought they got off to a great start there. Definitely have a much bigger test this upcoming weekend, but I thought for I thought tackling went well. I thought basically it was played very sound. I mean, for the defense to play 93 plays like they did and still hold anything together at the end of the game, that is phenomenal. We only have one game like that in my career. And of course, that was that disaster up in Wyoming where the defense pretty much laid an egg. So for those guys to play that many plays and to come away with just very, very strong defensive numbers for the entire game, that was really impressive.
Hey, John, this is Hobbo. Frank was asking you about your love linebacking, but how about the secondary, particularly Anthony Harris? He was designated as the National Defensive Player of the Week. So a tremendous job by him and his colleagues back there in the secondary.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you got a guy like that that can come up with those big plays, I mean, to have a good season, you have to have that. I mean, I think back to that 07 season, Chris Long came up with play after play. We had other guys like Chris Cook that stepped up at different times. And that's what it takes to have a good team, but especially a good defense. You've got to have guys like Anthony Harris. You know, they don't have to do it every game, but we've got to have somebody like that. If we're going to win consistently, we're going to have performances by like guys Anthony Harris to step up and make those two or three clutch plays a game, and that's what Anthony did. I mean, he had an excellent game, and just can't compliment him enough.
Quick question on the 93-yard drive. Was the defense just kind of out of gas at that stage?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, whenever you play that many plays, you know, I'm surprised it didn't happen more frequently. But, you know, like I said, they hung together well. I think that's a testament just to their off-season conditioning and Coach London and Coach Marcus getting them ready for the year. But yeah, I mean, whenever you play that many plays, you know, you're going to at least have one or two drives where you don't quite have it. And, you know, that's what it seemed like there on that one.
You know, one thing definitely got to happen against Oregon. I think they've got to rotate a lot of players so there's fresh legs on the field. And, you know, for instance, Andre Miles Redmond from Hermitage High School got in the game. And I think watching the replay today, I think he was cited for lining up offsides on a play. And the announcers jumped all over him, the poor kid. But, you know, he's just a redshirt freshman. But you know what? They're going to need him on the field, just like they're going to need Dante Wilkins, the true freshman, to spell the starting tackles, just to give them a rest, because there's going to be a lot of running and chasing in this game, and you know, maybe we'll get lucky, and there will be a huge rainstorm again to slow down the Ducks.
Although the Ducks, generally, they're good in water. You know, Ducks.
We'll see.
I don't know about these Ducks, but Ducks in general.
All right. Let's talk about Tanuta's pressure but not blitz-happy scheme. What did you think of that overall?
Yeah, I thought overall, I mean, like I said, it was sound. I mean, you know, we've had some issue. I mean, anybody that's watched the games really the last 4 years, you know, we've had some issues with just fundamentals, penalties, special teams, tackles. You know, I thought the scheme was very well put together. I mean, BYU has a very solid offense and a very difficult scheme to defend. And I thought our planning was very well. I mean, to hold them to, gosh, what we hold them to, you know, 12 points into the fourth quarter or something along those lines. I mean, that's just a significant defensive effort, both from the Tenuto's coaching and the scheme, as well as the player just going out and executing. So that was good to see.
You know, speaking of you know, just the defensive effort, because I thought, except with the exception of that one drive, they really did an outstanding job. I mean, there was, you know, they came up with a lot of plays. They broke up a lot of long passes that could have changed momentum. And they did put pressure on the other team, and they got the ball back on a few big plays with that interception, that safety in the end zone, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, one of the keys to the game was after they took the lead and we fumbled the ensuing kickoff,
the defense
held to a field goal, which kept us in the game. If they get another touchdown there, the game's over.
It's probably over. No, yeah. No two ways about it. And you know, talk about special teams here for a minute. With the exception of Khalid Shepard's mishandled kickoff return, what did you think overall of the special teams?
Just stupendous. I mean, that's, you've got to You've got to do the, I mean, that's the way you have to play games and play close games, is the special teams have to be exceptional. And if we're going to have a chance to win some of these evenly competitive games like BYU was, you know, special teams have to play very similar to the way they did Saturday. So that was really fun to watch. I mean, I thought our kickers did an excellent job. The punting was fantastic, and also that's a good portion on the coverage team. And of course, you know, Anthony Harris's block. I mean, without the punting and without Anthony Harris's block, you know, we probably don't win that game.
Yeah, it's amazing because, you know, certainly last year in recent history, the special teams have been costing us games rather than the cause for winning games, which is a very positive sign.
It is. You know, I've told folks for years, I mean, we're never going to have the athletic base of an Ohio State, or even, you could even put, you know, Penn State most years than not, or just those big historic schools that just, before the season starts from recruiting, they've got a roster full of athletes that their second and third team guys would start on a lot of other teams. We're never going to have that as a school, as a recruiting powerhouse. I mean, it's possible 20 years from now, but not in our immediate future and what we're seeing now. So for us to be competitive with all the teams that we play, special teams have to be on point, as well as those other just fundamental things that go with football. But yeah, I was really pleased with that, and hopefully that's something they'll be able to keep going here for the rest of the season.
Well, John, I think we need to move on to Chris Horn, our recruiting guy. But as always, we thank you for your time. We thank you for your expertise, and we look forward to having you back soon.
Yeah, I appreciate it, and looking forward to a real good year here for the Wahoos.
Absolutely, John Copper, former UVA outstanding linebacker and frequent guest on Who's Talking.
All right, John, we got to go. Thank you so much. All right, we got to pivot real quickly here because we've got a few minutes here.
It's about time we got a little basketball lingo in here.
Yeah, we got to talk about recruiting because recruiting has been going very well, right, Chris Horn?
Doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing well. A couple of key things because we're kind of short on time here.
Sure.
Would you mind touching on the big news in terms of Quinn Blanding, Andrew Brown, and Stephen Moss? And then if you could also touch on the biggest needs for 2014 for the football team, and then also your best guess in terms of how many scholarships are available for UVA.
Well, I guess we'll start with the latter question. It's going to be a limited class, in my opinion, probably about anywhere from 15 to 18, I think they could go. It could even be less. I don't think they'll be handing out any scholarships just to add players. So I think my guess around 15 is probably what it's going to end up being in the end. As far as remaining needs, I think certainly the defensive line is an area where Virginia can continue to add some players. You mentioned Andrew Brown is obviously coming in, and he's a big-time defensive tackle, five-star defensive tackle. Has some potential to play end as well, but probably a defensive tackle out of Oscar Smith. He's going to be enrolling actually in January, but I think they can use certainly some more bodies at defensive tackle, and defensive end is probably one of the bigger needs as well. But as far as the first topic, obviously you mentioned Moss, Blanding, and Brown. So you got Stephen Moss, who's a four-star offensive lineman out of Chancellor in Fredericksburg, had 20 or so Division I scholarship offers. I see him probably ended up being a guard on the next level, but what I think he's going to bring to the table, initially he's got that offensive lineman attitude that you like. He's very tenacious and likes to get after it, but I think certainly he's going to add some toughness as well. Then I touched on Brown a little bit. He's about 6'4", 290 pounds. He certainly does not look that big, but he certainly is that big, and he moves extremely well. Bona fide five-star player, a guy who can come in and add immediate depth right away and probably earn some pretty solid playing time in the rotation. As I mentioned, I think he's going to end up a defensive tackle. And then Quinn Blanding, a five-star safety prospect out of Bayside High School, is another guy who's a bona fide five-star, certainly, and I think he's worthy of that. I think he's a guy that can come in, make an immediate impact, and it's going to be interesting. Virginia's got, you know, Anthony Harris had a huge game this past Saturday. Brandon Phelps has looked pretty good, and you add Quinn Blanding. Obviously, he's a guy you want to get on the field, but, you know, Virginia's going to have some pretty nice depth, and last year they brought in Malcolm Cook at safety as well. So Virginia's going to have some pretty good, some big-time playmakers, I think, at the safety position, especially once Blanding arrives.
That'll be a little bit of competition. All right, give us an update. Corwin Cutler, the quarterback, a.k.a. Turtle, he's at Fork Union, correct?
That's correct. He's heading there this week. I talked to Coach Schumann, John Schumann, who's the post-grad coach there last month, and a lot of his players got there around mid-August, but Corwin was coming in a little bit later. Coach Schumann said he didn't want to bring him in, and he said they'd do a lot of a lot of work with like speed and agility stuff, and he felt like it was more important for him to continue to rehab that knee that he injured badly last November. He has gotten medical clearance, which is a good news certainly to play. So he's going to get some snaps this year at Fork Union. They're not going to rush him and give him too much to handle. So I think it'll be a nice transition. In my opinion, if I had to say, I think he'll end up being at Fork Union for a year. I think, you know, there's some talk that he's going to try to get to UVA in January, but if I had to guess right now, I think he'd be there for a year and enroll in UVA next summer. But he's looking pretty good right now, and I think he'll be able to take care of that stuff academically, and certainly that extra year just to keep getting that knee stronger will be beneficial for him. But he's a guy with a cannon for an arm and a lot of talent at quarterback.
All right, last question, and we'll bring you back in a couple of weeks to go into more depth on some of the other verbal commitments. Zach Jones, Perry Jones' little brother, mm-hmm. Is he at Piedmont Community College right now?
Yeah, that's the report. I caught up with he played at Oscar Smith as well, which, again, is where Andrew Brown played and where his older brother Perry played before going to UVA. But yeah, reportedly he's going to Piedmont Community College with the plan on enrolling in January. So as of now, that's the story. I know there's confirmation that he's not at Fork Union, which is where he was originally supposed to go. But so it sounds like the plan is to enroll in January, and he's a guy that, you know, could be kind of a sleeper to watch. He wasn't too highly recruited, but he was a standout for Oscar Smith. He did very well. Especially in the playoffs, his junior season had a terrific playoff, including the state championship game. So he's a guy that could be a playmaker as a receiver, but also in special teams in the return game as well. So,
all right,
supposed to be there.
Chris, I don't mean to cut you off, but sure. we're tight on time tonight. But we thank you, Chris Horn, the Sabres recruiting guru, and as Frank said, we'll have you back in a couple of weeks to go into more detail on some of these players.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Chris. A jam-packed final segment, Olympic Report. We still got Gordy Rawls, and we got LeClaire Ryan play of the game. Stay tuned. Much to follow.
All right, we're back. This is Frank and Jim, and this is Who's Talking. And we've got Dr. Gordy Rawls of Ortho Virginia joining us. He's a hand and wrist specialist. Was very closely mentored by Dr. Frank McHugh back in the good old days. And so, Gordy, only two players that we are aware of had injuries on Saturday's game. That was Taquan Mizell, apparently has a minor turf toe, and David Dean sprained his knee. But David Dean came back on the field, and Mizell played in the fourth quarter. So injuries can't be that bad. But, you know, what do you when you see those types of injuries in your practice, how are they treated?
He's slipping and sliding around a wet field probably helped prevent a lot of simple injuries. So I'm glad to hear that there was nothing other than a few sprains. A turf toe is a sprain of the big toe, and it uniquely is usually suffered by running backs. You know, as you can imagine, as they're falling to the ground, they're always, you know, trying to be moving forward. So as they're falling, the toe's headed towards the ground, and when somebody drives it into the surface, that, you know, creates a sprain of the big toe. And, you know, if it's mild, like any other sprain, it you know, he should recover, you know, reasonably quickly. I guess the risk is, you know, he gets in that situation many times as a running back, and it can happen again.
All right, the sprained knee. At some point in the first half, I believe, maybe second quarter, David Dean was down in a pileup and got up very slowly. He did walk off the field, and I think they brought him back, I think, in the third quarter, maybe midway of the third, and he ended up being involved in some huge plays, particularly in the fourth quarter. You know, a guy twists his knee like that, what tends to happen, and what do they need to do to get him ready for next week?
Well, I mean, you know, there are a lot of structures in the knee that can be injured, you know, if they're and they don't, you know, the fact that he's walking and able to run and, you know, play full force pretty much indicates that it's probably just what you said, a minor sprain. You know, and the typical things are ice, rest, you know, keeping it moving, you know, getting on these bikes. He may have gotten on a bike if there's one big enough for him. You know, just keeping that movement going, you know, keeping it, you know, which helps prevent the knee from stiffening up. And obviously you can have, you know, things torn, but I think that's unlikely in his case if he's back in the game.
Well, we're going to keep our eyes peeled for hand and wrist injuries, and next time we have one of those, we will get you back on the show. Gordy, thanks for calling in tonight, and we appreciate the support of Dr. Smith and Dr. Davis and Dr. Nediff and Dr. Dalton and yourself supporting Who's Talking this year.
And it's great to support you guys. You do a great job.
Well, listen, we'd like to bring you back maybe in a couple of weeks, and stay with us, okay?
Okay, Frank.
You have a good night.
Let's beat Oregon.
That would
kidding.
Be fun.
That'd be
all
great.
Right, a quick Olympic report from Chris Sill.
All right, guys. So women's soccer won this weekend 5-1 against number 7 in the country, Penn State. Virginia volleyball, women's volleyball, won the Jefferson Cup, beat JMU and Montana. And then baseball, just some alumni news. We had 4 former players that are going to be competing in the Arizona Fall League. Brandon Klein, Squirrels Jarrett Parker, Danny Holton, and Chris Taylor.
Next week's show again, real quick, Frank.
Well, we've got none other than Ahmad Hawkins, possibly Billy McMullen, and Dr. Thorpe Davis with the injury report. We thank you for listening to Who's Talking here on Labor Day. And go Wahoos. I'm predicting 35 for Oregon, 23 for Virginia.
I was going to say 31-17 Oregon, but go Hoos. Let's hope for an upset. Thanks for listening.
Go Wahoos. Beat those Ducks.